Hello, everyone. This is Deborah Rue, and you are listening to Human Potential at Work. Today, I'm excited to bring in a guest that has been on the show before. It's been a little while. I have invited Richard Streitz, who is the COO of Rue Global Impact, to join us today. And today, we're going to talk about AB 1395, a bill that was pending in the California legislation, and we were a little concerned. We liked a lot about the bill, but we were concerned about potential impact on the community of people with disabilities, and certainly on the aging community, people that are 55 and older. And usually, I think a lot of times our community feels that legislators don't really listen to us, but we actually were listened to by these legislators. So we want to send them a lot of praise and a lot of love. And we really want to thank them for listening. And we want to talk about AB 1395, but also legislations like this. And what can our community do to better support legislators so they can create legislation that is actually has positive impacts on our community, as well as, you know, the rest of society. So, Richard, welcome to the program. And do you mind telling the audience a little bit more about who you are, a little bit about your background, especially your background in lobbying experience? And then let's talk more about AB 1395 and seeing the praises of these legislators that listened.
Well, thank you very much, Deborah. It's great to be back on the show again. My background is varied as it relates specifically to the accessibility and disability community. My background was originally in theme parks and in entertainment design, and so I have a strong technical background when it comes to not only just construction and development, but also actual technology relating to devices and so forth. And moving on to my career as a legislator, as a realtor, I was heavily involved with the California Association of Realtors and was a legislative representative for California Association of Realtors, CAR, walking and working in the halls of Sacramento and dealing with legislators and working on language for bills and laws of making policy. So that's sort of my background and my experience in regard to how I approached and how I was working with the legislators with AB 1395.
Right. And so let's talk a little bit more about AB 1395. And we want to tell you who the author and the sponsors are. So the author and sponsor was Assemblymember Jordan Cunningham. Legislative Director for the Office of Jordan Cunningham is Taylor Melody, who wrote the bill. And then the co-sponsors are Assemblymembers Buffy Wicks, Assemblymember Chad Mays, Assemblymember James Gallagher, Assemblymember Monique Lyman, and Assemblymember Tom Lackey. And so we really, really want to send out warm, warm thanks and lots of love to Assemblymember Jordan Cunningham for really listening to the concerns that we had. And I know our entire team got behind this. We heard about this bill from, we're really taking a look at technology bills all over the United States and certainly globally as well, but mainly we're focused here in the United States. And we have been working with corporations for many years, but we are actually starting to get very discouraged with the corporations. And we love so many of the corporations that are trying to include us, but it's really starting to feel like I'm only going to do it because I'm being legislated to do it because I'm afraid of litigation and for compliance reasons. And we are seeing the people with some more severe disabilities not being included in the workforce. We're just starting to get concerned that the corporations aren't really taking this seriously like we want you to. And we want you to do it in a way that makes good business sense for you. But the reality is, people with disabilities are here. We've always been here, and we add great value to the workforce and to society. We also have contributed a lot to technology and tech for good and everything else. And we're actually starting to get a little tiny bit impatient with corporations not listening to us. And so when we heard about this, we thought it was a good bill, and Richard's going to tell us a little bit more about this bill, but we did not think it was a bad bill, but why we were concerned about it was we felt there really could be some major implications to the community of people with disabilities in the aging market if the bill was enacted without careful consideration of how it impacts our community. And so our entire team got behind it. We did videos. We did a lot of social media activity. We are thought leaders and market influencers. With Richard's experience and his pretty amazing brain that he's got going on there, he added great value, wrote a position paper and things like that. And then our community got behind us. We had people from all over the world tweeting and chattering and talking about the concerns that we do have with this technology. Not that we don't want artificial intelligence and all this. We love all the technology. We just want to make sure that it continues to support our wanting to be independent and being treated like the rest of society, and it doesn't accidentally hurt us and take away our independence. So, Richard, let me turn it over to you to talk a little bit more about AB 1395 and also your experiences with Assemblymember Jordan Cunningham's office.
Absolutely. So what the bill AB 1395 proposed, it dealt primarily with the privacy issues associated with smart TVs and smart speaker devices, smart speaker devices being like the Echoes and the of Amazon and Google's products in Surrey and so forth. More specifically, the actual speaker devices and their ability to listen in when they're triggered. What came to light, and one of the things that was the genesis for the creation of the bill, is that the voice data that is stored by these devices when a voice command is given is kept in several different locations, locally on the device itself, in the cloud, and also in a transcript form. Where that gets complicated is how the data is used in each one of those various positions. And this is where the privacy laws that currently existed for things like smartphones and PlayStations and the other listening and voice command devices that are currently at homes. Where this sort of separates that from is how that data was being used, sold, examined, mostly for improving the device's functionality, the artificial intelligence development that requires that voice data to continuously be analyzed. This is, of course, is critical for the person with disabilities community because through the constant use of the voice, it helps improve the accuracy of being able to respond to the voice of vocal commands of the vast varying arrays of vocalizations that person with disabilities may have. So it's critical that data be maintained and that artificial intelligence process be allowed to continue, but we have to understand and respect individuals' privacy, and that's where this bill stepped in to try to create legislation that restricted how that data was being used and telling the end users how that data was being used, because that's the other thing that was sort of missing from here is currently through the user agreement, the existing user agreement, there's no clear definition on how that data is retained and how it's being used. And so really what this bill was intending to do is to notify the users of that, of the use of the data. Unfortunately, the side effects of that was that it also limited the development that makes the device actually practically usable for persons with disabilities. So that's where we stepped in and saw the issue.
Right, right. And I know that you, that we wrote a position paper and you really were the author of that. And once again, you reached out to Cunningham's office and they were very receptive. I will say that a comment was made that they felt a little blindsided by would happen, because we only found about it sort of late in the day. We found about it the day before our federal holiday, our birthday, July 4th. And so we really only had 3 days to respond, but we responded. We responded with it showing a lot of activity and a lot of data. And so the legislator, you actually spoke to his office and talked to him about what our concerns were. And they told you they had reached out to the community of people with disabilities. But the problem is a lot of people don't understand this technology. They just don't. It's new and it's growing and it's changing. And a lot of people with disabilities and the activists and the lobbyists for these groups, they do not really understand the implications of this technology and what it means to our community and how it could hurt us if we were not really properly considered. And another thing to realize, and we know this, the community of people with disabilities and the aging market are using these devices in sometimes different ways than the rest of the population. We are more dependent on these devices. We use this to open our doors, close our doors, use our computers. We're using it for so much more than even the regular population. The rest of the population, they could benefit from the way the community of people with disabilities and the aging market are using these devices. And so could these tech companies too, Richard, as you know. So I think there's a lot that can be learned from our community, but not everybody in our community really understands these issues. So tell us a little bit about your conversation with Cunningham's office.
Yes, with Taylor Melody. They were very receptive. When I was able to establish contact with them, they were very receptive to having a dialogue. As you said, they felt a little blindsided because they did approach their normal groups that they contact, that are advocacy groups, personal disability advocacy groups in California. And typically when that happens, there's sort of three responses when legislators approach an organization like that. There's either support, oppose, or no position. The no position, it sort of means that this doesn't apply to us, or we don't see anything here that necessarily makes us feel we have to have an official position, either supporting or opposing it. So it's sort of just a neutral position. In this instance, after these groups were contacted, they responded that they had no position, which made the legislators, of course, naturally feel like they had done their due diligence and that they could move forward without necessarily having them at the table or continuing a more formal dialogue with them. So again, you know, that's no fault, no foul. That's the process that they had every intention. I also must say that that Jordan Cunningham's record, his voting record with supporting the person with disability community is actually very high, and he's obviously a very good friend to the community, persons with disability and the aging community in California. So you know, he. Naturally, when we started our campaign and we approached them, of course, they felt blindsided by that. But we had very good open dialogue and engaging. He asked questions. I asked questions. He explained clearly what the intent of the bill was. And certainly, we have no issue with the privacy aspects of it. The privacy issues are very, very important for consumers and for the users in California. So, no issue with that at all. It was just the unwritten sort of ramifications or side effects as a result that could occur with this bill passing if they aren't addressed properly in more formal language in the bill to allow for maybe a multi-tiered approach to divisions of security. How deep do you allow that information to go and so forth? So there is ways that we can form and make that language work to really have a strong bill language that makes a very good bill.
And we are concerned about the privacy issues. I was talking to a friend of mine this morning. We were talking about the bill, and he said, you know, Deborah, there are some things about you know, this artificial intelligence that spooks me. He said, I have one of those devices. I won't mention which one, but I have one of these popular devices. And he said, and we moved into a new home. And he said, and we were talking about carpet pads. He said, I've never bought carpet pads, but he said, our new house needs carpet pads. And he said, within a very short amount of time, even a few hours, I don't know if it was a few hours or a few days, he started getting ads on all of his devices, on his smartphone, on his computer, all of his devices for carpet pads. And so did his husband, and so did his mother that lives with them. And he said, I've never really even seen a commercial for carpet pads, but how interesting that we're talking about it in our home, and all of a sudden we get ads for carpet pads. So that's a little chilling and a little scary. And, you know, somebody said, why don't we have a privacy mode? We were talking about it before we went on air, and you said, we do have a privacy mode. You unplug it. But people are really freaked out about this and the ethics. And I think, you know, we've done so much work with corporations, and we really want corporations to continue to include us. But once again, we're starting to get a little discouraged by I'm only going to do just enough so that I don't get sued. I'm starting to get very impatient with that. And so we're actually going to make a little bit of a change at Root Global Impact, and we are going to start working more with legislators and politicians, and we want to do a real call to action. We want to know who are the politicians that support us, like, you know, Jordan Cunningham. I mean, obviously, who is a Republican? And a Republican in, you know, a blue state like California. But all I know is this. They listened to us. And I'll let you talk more about this. And they really cared about our concerns and wanted this to be okay for our community. And I think the community of people with disabilities, we need to know those politicians that do care about us. There's a lot of efforts being made from groups like Respectability and others to determine what politicians care. Are their websites accessible? If your websites aren't accessible and you're a politician, then you don't care about our community. And we're going to notice that. And so we're going to spend a lot more time starting to do more lobbying, because we're actually seeing, once again, I complain about this a lot. I'm starting to complain about this, but we are seeing people with disabilities being employed in the workforce. That's great. But we're seeing it more from, we're going to employ people like myself with ADHD or depression or dyslexia, all important. But we were already in the workforce. What about the people that are blind, the people that maybe are deaf, the people that have a severe mobility, like LaMondre Pugh, who works for us and did some videos? And we're starting to think at our company that we maybe could even do more good working with the legislators. And so we want to pour a lot of love on Jordan Cunningham for listening to our community. And then we want to know who else is listening. So if you're listening to our program and you think that you have some really strong politicians that do care about us, I will do a shout out to Senator Mark Kane and Senator Tim Kaine and Senator Mark Warner of Virginia, because they both have been very active on supporting the community of people with disabilities. But I would also ask you, Richard, so this bill is in California, but we are a global company. We have employees all over the world and throughout the United States, but we are located in Virginia. But tell us why you know so much about California, because you now live at least part of your time in Virginia.
That's right. Well, I'm a native Californian. I was born and raised there, educated and so forth. And so I have a great love for the state and for all that it stands for its future. And one of the things that I found as a result of going through my legislative education, if you will, when I was working with CAR and walking the halls and working the bills with the legislators there, is that what happens in California really helps and oftentimes leads legislation and policy that travels across and gets adopted by multiple states. And many times also ends up being a foundation for a federal law or federal piece of legislation. So California has the unique position of driving, especially when it comes to things like technology. They're a very large driving force with legislation for that. And so it's important that when something is started or gets put into law in California, that it's done and it's done right because of the tremendous ramifications that has downstream over the years as it gets adopted by the rest of the country. So that certainly is one reason why I feel it is absolutely critical that we work hand in hand with these legislators. And again, you know, with Jordan Cunningham, Assemblymember Jordan Cunningham, I think one thing that must be appreciated by everyone is the tremendous amount of work that goes into getting the bill to the stage that it is. This is something that doesn't just happen in a couple weeks of throwing some words on a paper and pushing it through. This is an incredibly grueling process that can take really, you know, from formation to this various stages, you know, a couple years of work. So for him to voluntarily pull it from the voting process, from the committee vote, on Tuesday, it shows a tremendous amount of leadership and conviction that he felt, you know, this maybe we can rework this. You know, the issues were brought up and the office listened and he said, you know, maybe we can make this better. And so again, much credit goes to him for his leadership and his ability to see to listen, digest and react appropriately so the best, strongest legislation can be created.
Yeah, and I know that, you know, Taylor spoke to you the night before the bill was going to the table. And to be honest, we thought we were too late to the party. We did not think there was any way that we could influence this. And when we realized that, you know, Jordan Cunningham, you know, showed leadership and pulled it and didn't kill the bill. It's just something they're going to take a year to consider. We were just so grateful that they cared about what our community thought. And so this is leadership, and we want to make sure that when we see these leaders, that we praise them and we make sure that everybody else knows the leadership that they showed. So it was very, very exciting. And so, Richard, let's talk a little bit about how we went attracting attention, especially at such a late notice. You know, we only had 3 working business days to do this. Let's talk about how we got some attention around that AB 1395.
Well, social media, of course, nowadays really becomes the flashpoint for being able to attract attention. But you have to be, just having a large social media network, you have to be able to know strategically how to use it and the timing of when and how you approach various segments so that you maximize the pyramiding aspect of the phone game, the telephone game. So the telephone pyramid. So what we did is really try to get to the districts and try to understand which advocacy groups that we could garner support from to help talk to their legislators, because that's really the strongest point to be able to get change is have the constituents talk and phone call and email and so forth. We're from out of state, so our opinion really didn't carry a whole lot of weight just really out of the gate. So it was important to understand and establish a base that's there in California to really promote the idea that this legislation may not necessarily be 100% in supporting the person with disability in aging communities. So that was really the first thing is to really get the advocacy groups on board and get their support, and then sort of move up the chain from there, from districts to the actual to the judicial committee, and expressing our concerns to the committee that was actually going to be voting on moving the bill out of committee to the next step, and so addressing those individuals, and then from there, you know, getting to the authors and so forth to make sure that by that point there was a lot of activity because of our social media. We created videos that went out. That started attracting attention across multiple states and across the country, different countries responding in. Because privacy issue is such a universal theme. It's not just something that is for Californians or the USA. It's, I mean, all countries are going through this. The European Union is definitely going through large issues with privacy access, especially as it relates to technology. So this is something that at a global stage, everyone is really trying to work and figure out and dig into. But anyway, in regard to the process with AB 1395, that was sort of the process that we went through. And we have an extremely extensive and large social media network across multiple platforms. And that, of course, helps a tremendous amount when we're able to, in a very short period of time, sort of scramble the troops and get action.
Yeah, it was really exciting. I had some, some people that follow me, they're like, well, Deborah, we're not even in the United States, or I'm not located in California. Why should I care? Well, why you should care is because privacy concerns all of us. And once again, our community they're using these voice devices in very powerful ways that help us be more independent and help us truly be more included in society. So these are critical technologies to us. And we do not want to get in the way of the privacy issues. We want privacy issues, but at the same time, we have to get special consideration to make sure our community is not hurt in our current independence and the independence that we want to continue to have moving forward. So we got some interesting conversations going on, and a lot of people like Mike Gifford from Canada weighing in, and Bianca, who's in Amsterdam, weighing in, and Neil, who's in London, weighing in. We had a very interesting dialogues happening. And it does show that because of all the time and effort that we've spent on our shows, on Access Chat, on our blogs, on our pouring our own personal money, you don't even want to know how much money that I've invested in this industry, that we've all invested in this industry, because we believe that people with disabilities are just part of community. They should be in the workforce. They should be included in every aspect of society. We need to be included in the smart houses and the smart cities, all of the conversations. And we need to be included in the leadership things. And right now, there's still a lot of talk and not as much action as we should have, considering the Americans with Disabilities Act is 29 years old this month. Yeah. So, you know, how patient should we be while we wait for big corporate America and the rest of the corporations to include us? And I've mentioned this before, but we are representing the valuable 500 in the United States. And I've recently had two major brands that I'm not going to mention say, no, we don't need to be part of it. We've done enough. And I'm thinking, really, you think you've done enough? You think that you have truly included us? Well, okay. Well, that's interesting. But I think we are going to start talking a lot more about who really is doing, including our community. And somebody suggested to me today that we should have the valuable 500 politicians around the world. Who are the politicians that listen to us, that really consider including our community in these conversations? We're a billion people strong. 1 in 4 Americans have a disability, according to the CDC. Stop ignoring us. Let's talk a little bit more about how technology and these issues, because you had said this to me the other day, Richard. Well, you know, Deborah, we need to be looking at all bills that are happening all over the United States, federally and statewide, when it comes to technology, because our community is so dependent on technology that if you start to change these laws, which we want you to, and we're not considered, we are going to have the biggest impact. And the legislators, the politicians, you need to come to groups like Rue Global Impact that understand the technology, and others. There's other brilliant people out there, but And we, Richard, we probably need to be working with these disability groups, making sure they understand what, you know, technology and how it works and all the moving parts, and that they can come to us to help them with their efforts. So it's interesting with this experience and with the outcome of them delaying this bill at our request, which is such a huge blessing to our community that they listen. We feel like we're often not listened to. You know, the world has changed, and we're really intrigued by this. So I threw multiple things at you, Richard, but I know that you and I have been friends for a long time. But so let's talk about the technology issues and the bills, and then a little bit more about the outcome of AB 1395 and the love that we want to show Jordan Cunningham and the team. That thank you for listening to us.
Exactly. Well, you know, technology is absolutely critical for so many individuals that are in this community, the person with disability community and the aging community, especially with the advancements that are coming. That are coming forward with the extreme advancements in artificial intelligence specifically. What's unfortunate at the same time is that in order for those processes to go on, they require data. They require data pools, and that means whether that's keyboard strokes or that allow intuitive vocabulary and intuitive texting to voice data to allow increased functionality for individuals who you know, as you had said earlier, rely heavily on these devices to engage with their environments, to participate in services, and to be productive in not only in their home but also in a work environment. These devices become absolutely critical to them. So as a result of these multiple layers of devices, not just one or two, but I mean from phones to computers to what have you, the amount of technology that is advancing requires, unfortunately, legislation to be able to sort of garner and keep it corralled in, because it can be a bit of a Wild West. And this, I think, is where this privacy law really aimed to try to help curtail. And this is the selling on the back end to third parties, the data, the consumer data that exists. This is, again, this is nothing new. This is something that credit cards have been practicing since the beginning, or banks were doing with check writing before credit cards. So tracking purchases and then selling that data by financial institutions to third parties has been going on since, you know, forever, way before technology. So what happened in this instance is that organizations that have these types of devices, just all they did is just sort of continue that process. Well, we have all this retail data. Everyone else is making money off it. Why don't we too? And so it just became another avenue of being able to collect that retail data and selling it. So that's how I think we kind of got into the position that we're in. No one was doing anything malicious. This is sort of business as usual from an organization that engages in these sorts of activities. So right or wrong and indifferent, that's a whole other discussion. But the truth is, that's just the reality of where we are. Now, we are also, as a result of the advancements of technology, in a position where we can start defining how those, we can start parsing out this data and at what level this data is going, how far deep, how far back we can put privacy laws in place or policies in place that say, I'll let you use my data up to this point, but not beyond this point, or I'll allow you. And so that's kind of where we are. And that's where I think in this case, Assemblymember Cunningham's office and this bill specifically, I think we're in a position where we can now address that and maybe create something that becomes the foundation for a much larger federal policy that really stands true and something that California can be very proud of establishing and Jordan Cunningham specifically being very proud to hold the authorship position of that. I think we can really create strong. Now, where the advocacy groups sort of ended up, I think, missing an opportunity in working with them is not initially seeing the side effects, the ramifications of how this policy was going to work. I think they looked at it strictly as just a privacy issue, and that was it, not necessarily realizing that what was at stake is the data specifically, and how handling or mishandling that data can dramatically affect the artificial intelligence development aspect of it that dramatically and has a direct impact to the person with disability community. So educating, being able to contact and work and deal with both sides, not only just legislators, but also the advocacy groups to help them understand how really any, at this point, any technology bill, I think any policy that is associated with technology needs to have someone from the person with disability community and the aging communities present to have a voice at that table, to be able to put input, because all of it affects us.
And I agree. I would just say, and I know you agree with this, Richard, we need to be at the table, but we need to have people at the table that understand the issues.
Yes.
Because one thing that we're seeing is these legislators, these politicians are including us in the conversations, but you've got to have people included in the conversations that understand complex data. And now we've started doing it anyway, but we're tracking bills that have anything to do with technology, any of this voice data, any of this stuff, to make sure that we're there to educate our community, that we're there to educate the politicians, and we're there to educate the technology makers as well. And so I think we were just stunned that Cunningham showed such leadership and said, I'm going to table this until we have more data. We do not want to accidentally hurt the community of people with disabilities. And I don't know if I've become cynical American, but I just did not expect that they would listen to us. And so I am thrilled beyond words that we have these really great, you know, politicians there in California. So bravo to Cunningham. And I'm hoping that Jordan Cunningham will actually come on the program and talk about this.
Because, love to have that, yeah.
Oh, that would be amazing, because why did they listen? Why do they care about us? Thank you for, and isn't that ridiculous that it's just so rare, it feels, when we're listened to. And so, but if you have the right data, I think nobody's going to miss what just happened. I mean, this is really powerful. And as soon as they had this additional information, they're like, no, we agree. Let's wait and let's make sure there's not negative repercussions. What can we do together? And I'm hoping they will work with us and let us help them make this a better bill that will pass in the future. You know, and it will be able to meet everybody's needs. But it's sort of exciting. And I would definitely like to do a call to action of anyone that's listening. Once again, if you know politicians that you want to introduce us to, if you want us to come and train with you, if you want us to provide information, we're going to write a few more position papers on this. And we're getting others telling us they want to write position papers on this as well. And why are position papers important, Richard?
Position papers, why are position papers important? They're really critical in allowing either an organization or a prominent individual to establish a specific position as it relates to a specific issue. And that is important because it should be written by an individual that has some knowledge, some formal working knowledge of what the issue is being discussed at, so that there can be a level of some authority in talking to it. You know, it's important to come with facts and so that it can be a piece that legislators can go to, because that's really what's critical. Is position papers are important for legislators as well as for informing the public, so that everyone can gain from the information. These aren't op-ed pieces. These are not opinion pieces. The idea is for them to be factual and to be very straightforward in relaying and establishing a specific position and data to back that position up. These aren't, they're not op-ed. They're not confrontational. These are just meant to be really just sort of factual pieces. And that is why position papers are important. And any issue that comes out, I think all advocacy groups should look at bills that, especially when they come to technology, and really create a position paper, a formal position paper, and turn that into their legislators or publish it, have it available on their websites and so forth, so that the opinions can be known.
Right. And if any of these disability persons organizations want support, come to Rue Global Impact. We're happy to help you. And I will say, we are a corporation. We're a small little LLC corporation. So we don't want to do all this work for free like we've been doing. What we do adds value. I'm getting so cheeky in my old age, but I'm tired of our community being ignored. I'm just tired of it. I'm really tired of it. And so, and once again, I have disclosed that my husband has early onset dementia. My daughter has Down syndrome, and she's been so ill with, you know, over the last couple of years living in chronic pain. We are part of this community. We care about it. We want to be included, and we're tired of not being included. We are really tired. So if you also are tired of us not being included, join forces with us. We already are very active globally on these issues, but I think there's work to be done here in the United States. And I think the disability advocacy groups that are just focusing all of their attention on the corporations and ignoring the community of people with disabilities, you need to stop doing that. You need to stop doing that. We need to look at what is best for our community. Because we're so large, what happens to us happens to everybody. So let's not kid ourselves. And we've got to take care of our brothers and sisters in this. So I compliment you, Richard. You did an amazing job, an amazing job. Your brain always amazes me. But I've often said to you, you don't do the KISS, the keep it simple, stupid principle, because you're just so smart. But your brain is needed in these political discussions. So we're looking forward to having conversations with our senator, Senator Kaine and Senator Warner. We're going to our governor in Virginia. We're going to be talking. We want to help, you know, Cunningham's office with his bills. We're here now, guys. And we're very excited about this direction because we think will have a bigger impact. And of course, we're going to continue to celebrate the corporations that are including us, absolutely, and helping them and supporting them. But we are not willing to sit and wait anymore for you to include us. We're not. So thank you, Richard, so much for being on the show. Special thanks to our producer, Douglas Foresta, which is an amazing man. Thank you to the team at Rue Global Impact for all the people that retweeted and commented on the information that we were sending out. And once again, we really appreciate the Assemblyman Jordan Cunningham for his leadership. And if anyone's listening to this and you're working on a bill or legislation, please come to us. Let us help. We want you to pass your bills. We just don't want it to hurt the community of people with disabilities. So thank you, Richard. And
thank you.
And I usually ask our guests how they can get in touch with them. And so Richard, why don't you let everybody know what your social media handles are and our website? You know, I mean, you're our COO, but still. Just so that people know how to get in touch.
Absolutely. You can certainly catch me with email at richard@ruglobal.com. Our website is www.ruglobal.com. And you can catch me on Twitter at StritesAbility. That's STREITZ ability.
And also he's on LinkedIn and he's on Facebook. He's part of Human Potential at Work on Facebook. Yeah, I'm going to keep going for him.
Oh, okay.
And and then, of course, you know, we have a lot of social media handles. We believe in social media. I know a lot of people are misbehaving on social media, but social media is a very powerful advocacy tool. So we love it. And we thank all of the social media platforms, Twitter, LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, all of them that are allowing our voices to be heard. So thank you for being on this show today, Richard, and I look forward to continuing this conversation. So bye, everyone.
Absolutely. Thank you. Bye-bye.